Here, the old gods are dead.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, y'all, this is a Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Hiya.
We've just had the worst time trying to get this recording started.
Worst day of my fucking life. Worst day of my fucking life. Yeah, that was so shit. The mics hate us.
Yeah, they do. Happy Scottish Day by Visibility. A.K.A. Burns.
It took me a while to get that. Not the by Visibility. Happy New Year as well? Or have we had an episode since the New Year?
Oh, no, we've had an episode since New Year.
Really?
Uh-huh.
We are feeding the girls. Loch Ness?
What was it we did? Yeah, Loch Ness, yeah.
Shut up.
The way that we can't even keep track of what we do.
I record and then I forget everything that I was thinking about. Like, with exams, like, I will learn the stuff and then as soon as I'm finished the exam, it's gone. So I'm like, I'm qualified, but at what cost? Yeah, it's fine. Who's going to die? Maybe someone. but... Anyway, Rebecca, what have you been up to this week or recently or since we recorded last?
Well, since we recorded last, I did actually go to Edinburgh Castle.
Hot.
Not me being absolutely shocked that a fortress was full like army history. So like, I went expecting like medieval castle vibes. And I did kind of like quite a lot of stuff, but like it's an army place. And I was like saying that to my mum. I was like, oh, like, I went and it was all, like, loads of army stuff. And I'm not, like, really into that.
Yeah.
And my mum was like, aye, obviously, what did you think? She was like, they did the tattoo there. And I was like, ah. I was like, all right, so it was obvious to everybody but me.
So the inside isn't medievally looking?
Nah, not really. The, like, hall where the black dinner happened, that was there. But there's only, like, a tiny wee sign outside to say that that's what that is. And you could, like, scan a QR code and, like, listen to something about it. And I was like, well, they don't know. That I've actually done a podcast episode about this.
Wait, I would like to say I'm a huge proponent of, like, because I went to Manchester recently, like, the other day, and all of the, like, art galleries and stuff, like, they have QR codes for, like, all of the exhibits now, and I'm like, it's kind of like getting a free tour. I kind of love it. Like, I wish it was always like that.
Historic environment Scotland's really catching up. Although, right, hot take, if you want to go to a castle in Scotland, go to Stirling Castle.
I don't doubt that it's better because it was so fun.
Yeah. I did have a fun time. There's like a chapel there for St. Margaret and I'm massively obsessed with her. future what? Episode topic.
What's that castle that's near Inverness called again? I should know.
I feel like this is the one that's like in our art that we can never name. And every time we misname it, Duncan, who did our art, messages us and he's like, it's not that one, it's this. Is it Urquhart? No, Urquhart Castle's on Loch Ness. It's not that one.
Oh, I was thinking of Urquhart Castle.
It's no Urquhart Castle and it's no Castle Stalker either. Right.
Which one is it then?
I'm Googling it. Famous Scottish Castle. So this is a Scottish history podcast. Famous Scottish castle.
Top 10 Scottish castles to visit on BuzzFeed.
It's really Instagrammable, so that's like why people like it so much.
Blackmange Castle. Google.
Eileen Donan Castle.
Oh. Oh my god, I used to always call it Eileen Donan. Wait, is Eileen Donan?
Is it Eileen Donan or Eileen Donan?
Come on, Eileen.
Anyway, we're not linguists. Not
and we have never and we should never have claimed to be linguists. So like that's on you if you thought you were coming here for that at this point.
I mean, speaking of us like butchering the Scots language, this episode is our unreleased pilot that's us talking about Tam O'Shanter, like talking through Tam O'Shanter and how much we're obsessed with Robert Burns and how much we want to give him a big kissy wissy.
And he would kiss both of us because that man was not heterosexual.
T. But this is like unreleased. Nobody ever heard this. I think we recorded it in like the start of August.
Yeah, no. On my bedroom floor.
Cute. Just two girls.
Yeah, we made like a pillow fortress to like block out all the sound and stuff. It was cute.
And we had one mic. It took me so long to try and edit it because I was like, no, this is going to be cringy. But I actually like it better than our actual first episode. I am the world's biggest hater here, first episode, so.
I'm the world's second biggest hater of our first episode, I cannot lie.
But this one's quite fun. It's like a relaxed fit. Just a wee talking tour through Tam O'Shanter.
Yeah, we really said Wikipedia rights with that one.
I literally went on BBC Bite Size. Like.
Oh my god, wait. Okay, the Easter egg, BBC Bite Size. Anyway.
Do you want to tell everybody what you've been up to before we get into our episode?
I've been seeing the world. I've been falling in love. I've been passionately meeting new people. I've been drinking. I've been dancing. And that's about it, really.
Describing the plot of Eat, Pray, Love.
As I should.
Before we get into this episode, we wanted to do something new, and we asked our besties to send us in some spooky stories or advice if you're really brave, and we did actually get quite a decent response. So if you did send us an email or an Instagram message or a Twitter DM, don't worry, we will read out your message. They've just been assigned to specific episodes, so yeah. We will get through them at some point.
And some of you are insane. Like, I'm just saying. Like, there's one that I got sent and I was like, okay. But that's a story for another.
We should do that one next.
Yeah, we're doing that. Next episode is... An event. Okay. Okay, you go.
I think you did send me it, but I was drunk and I was like, I'm not reading it. That I would have remembered anyway, but
I'm not gonna read it. I'm so not gonna read it.
a friend of the pod, Christy, wrote in an email saying, "My dog sees dead people." And she starts, "Hey besties, how do you both feel about dogs/young children? Because those are the same thing. Seeing ghosties. I'm a firm believer that animals and children are more connected to the ooky spooky and just more susceptible to the feeling of glitter emoji vibes, glitter emoji, than us, the weathered by capitalism adults. My partner's dog frequently follows things around the room with her eyes that are not there. Not even a speck of floating fluff or a teeny tiny fly. This little bitch sees ghosts. She's not the only one. As I've been shitting my pants on multiple occasions while staying at our family friend's farm. They have 5 dogs and stay at the top of a hill in the middle of nowhere. When staying over to dog sit, they will often bark aggressively at things inside and outside the house, as if trying to warn something off. This is especially goosebump inducing as the farmhouse is really old with no outdoor lighting, so when it's dark outside, you can see nothing. It's giving..." This is me speaking, you know, Chrissy. "It's giving The Strangers."
Yeah. Get out, girl. Leave.
So she continues, "I have no memories of seeing ghosts myself when I was young, but do vividly remember feeling like we weren't alone in certain places and the sudden shift of energy in rooms. My little brother used to scare the shit out of my mum by talking about all the other people here when he was young and would talk to imaginary friends with full names. I still get these feelings in certain places, but much less intensely as I did as a child. And my brother doesn't speak to random Victorian ghosts anymore and didn't turn into a little Jennifer Love Hewitt. So how do you feel? Do you think this is something we are more tapped into as kids and grow out of? I would love to hear your take. Lots of love.
Yes. Absolutely. No, but first of all, maybe the dog is just old. But also, like, maybe she's just senile. But also, at the same time, I did often recount the ghosts and shit I saw to my mum when I was younger. So I do believe that, I mean, I still do it though. So I don't know if we necessarily need to grow out of it. Like, be crazy if you want, see ghosts if you want. And that's up to you. But yeah, like, I feel like, you know how, like, it's such, like, a trope in, like, movies and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, like, kids are so innocent, they can, like, see whatever. And then I feel like dogs are intelligent enough to see it. Cats probably can, but, like, they want you to die. And then...
They're not going to warn you.
They're not going to warn you. They're like, fucking finally, I'll eat this bitch first. And then I feel like pigs could probably see... Like, hot take, pigs can probably see ghosts.
Tea.
Because, like, they're, like...
I'm down for that. Them and cows.
Yeah. They're, like, humans without, like, corruption, I guess. unless you're, like, Animal Farm sort of pigs, then...
I was,
like,
literally just going to say.
Literally, on God, one of the best books I've ever read, even though I was forced to read it at, like, gunpoint by my English teacher for National 5 English, I enjoyed it.
As a former creepy child... I can back this up. So my first ever memory, we lived in a block of flats when I was like just born, and I think I might have been 2 or 3 when this occurred. So we were on a ground floor flat, and the window in mine and my sister's bedroom like faced the back of the block of flats. It was like a shared, not really a garden area, it was like a council estate, so it was kind of gross. I was looking out of the window, and I was like, I was standing on the flare in my bedroom looking out this window, and I could see, this is so scary, right? So it was a chalk face, like an alabaster piece of like chalk or marble or something, and a face had been carved into it, and it looked just like my dad, but there was a single tear rolling down its face, right? So I walk out of there and go and speak to my mum, and my mum was only like 20, like in her early 20s, and I go through, and I'm like, Mummy, Daddy's crying at the window. And my mum was like, what the actual fuck? She was like, get it. And her
be gone, you spooky bitch.
Like, literally, her pals were there, and they were all like, they were like, we need
not
to
you having your exorcist moment. You were like, Daddy's crying at the window, and then like peed on the floor.
Well, that's my first ever memory. Like, it's so fucked. When I was a teenager, I started to see like a lot of ghosts and stuff. This is me like fully coming out. Like I am a medium. I went to a psychic and I was like, no, like, yo, please close me down. Like, I didn't want to see any of this stuff anymore. And we went through this whole ritual, and I had never seen ghosts for like years until I was speaking to my current girlfriend. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to open myself back up again to like spirits and stuff. That's literally all it took. And then started to like see creepy shit again, and hey, like, really weird vivid dreams. So as a former creepy child and now creepy adult, I didn't think you grow out of it unless you lose interest.
Yeah,
does that make sense? So like, Christy is my friend who kindly wrote in, and she's a bit witchy woo, but not as witchy woo as I am, so I think that will be why she's still in tune to stuff, but like, it doesn't happen as frequently to her.
Yeah, I mean, remember the event that we had? Like, that was a moment.
Oh my god, that was a moment. I don't even know how to describe this. One time me and Liam were talking to each other about my childhood.
Without being provoked, I described a very specific place and person. And we possibly believe that, like, I have seen, like, one of Becca's, like, friends by accident.
Yeah, I shared like a whole childhood memory with you without actually having to speak words. Like, my whole room was vibrating. It was fucking crazy. And no, we weren't like on drugs or anything like that. Like, this genuinely happened. Like, we were in our sober eras.
Yeah, I was like completely teetotal at this point in time. So
it was a vibe.
It was insane.
I explained it to my sister and she was like, oh my god, that's so cool. And then like told my girlfriend and she was like, oh.
Ew.
She was like, right, sound.
She was just jealous. She was just jealous. She wishes it was her, and she'll never have what we have. I'm kidding.
A podcast. A podcast.
Hi, we charted in the history podcast charts on both iTunes and Spotify. Who else did that? Hmm? Okay, that's what
I thought. To you. If you get a chance, rate and review. Only good ones. So if you hate any stories or any questions that you want us to answer or anything like that, you can email us at thecreepywepodcast@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter, DM us on Instagram, or you can visit our website, thecreepywepodcast.co.uk, click contact, and there is a submission form where you can like write a big long email if you really want. Send us advice though. Like, who else would you want to give you advice apart from like two like Gen Z queer people who are psychic?
Former drug addicts, psychics, you know, just the usual from the usual, you know how it is.
So I suppose we should like let you listen to our unofficial unreleased pilot episode on Tam O'Shanter. Please be nice to us. The first like 5 minutes are a bit rough, and then we like really do get into the swing, and it's quite funny. References to Carol Ann Duffy. References to Scooby-Doo.
We
left William Shakespeare in the mud at one point.
That sounds right, right? I would just like to say, I'm like sat, like, so my parents like redid the bedroom that I grew up in, and it's now like a porch, and all I can see is the back garden, which is really dark and not well lit, and like all I can see is like the washing line like shaking, and I'm like, I'm about to have an experience. After
somebody's
what we
watching you. Somebody is watching you.
I don't like it. Ever since you told that story, like, that fucked me up. Like, that. Like, when you said I like looked out the window and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
My back window, like, the back windows in your house, like, face a forest now. And it's, like, really creepy woods. And, like, if I'm ever out there at night, like, I will genuinely not be out there for more than, like, 10 seconds. Like, if I need to go to the bins or that, I, like, run.
I don't want to be in a situation for even an hour where I'm not enjoying myself. Do you know that one? Kim Cattrall? Spiders in my vagina?
Not afraid to reference.
Anyway. To reference, even when it doesn't make sense.
Anywho. Here's your unofficial pilot. Right, I'm just going to start it now. And I just want to preface this that we are by no means professionals, and that this is a pilot episode, so if nobody hears this, unless it's in a Patreon exclusive when we're rich and famous, then we're probably going to redo this at some point. But
once we have the Casper mattress,
once we've got that HelloFresh money. But this is the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca McAllister,
and I'm Liam Nielsen,
and we're basically gonna be talking about creepy Scottish stories and myths and folklore and stuff. So we decided to start with my creepy origin story, which is Tam O'Shanter. I don't know if you hear like the same kind of connection to this.
Oh yeah, she's one of the OGs. She's where the fascination began.
I can remember doing this in primary school. Also, at my primary school, they made one boy learn the whole 225 lines of this, and he read it.
Was he autistic? Is that how he remembered it all?
He's really, really brainy, so like... he'll probably listen to this, but if this makes light of day. But basically, if you... Dinnikin. I mean, I'm assuming that the most people who will listen to this first episode are Scottish and have read or done Tam O'Shanter at school. Basically, it's an epic poem by Robbie Burns. It's his best poem, in my opinion.
It's his favourite.
It's his favourite, so that says it all. But it's 225 lines. It's very, very long. We're not going to quote the entire thing, mainly because...
We'll butcher it.
Like, I'm for five, so, like, that's... The kind of Scots that I speak is very chavvy.
Yeah, and I'm from Inverness, so, like, you just don't want to hear that. You just don't. It's just it's a fronting. That's what it is.
The Scots accents that are in the like Highlands of Scotland are either like
air, butter, war.
So either so farmy that you couldn't tell, and then the other half are so colonised that
wow.
Those Highland clearances, they stuck. That's for another episode, though.
Yeah, ethnic cleansing is not what we're going into right now.
We'll leave that deep dive for like a two-parter. And basically, we'll preface this with like who Robbie Burns is. So he's our national bard. He was born in Ayr on January 25th in 1759. Does that make him a Capricorn? I mean, it would make sense. It would make sense. I'm not going to actually stop to Google if he was a Capricorn, but I'm going to say with my whole heart that I think he's a Capricorn, and if I'm wrong, then...
No, I'm not.
I can remember in primary school when we were doing Tam O'Shanter, or like any Burns Day, like any year, my primary school teachers and my high school teachers, whenever Robbie Burns was mentioned, they were like, and he was so hot.
He was such a shagger.
And we would always be like, right. Like, dry yourself off. Like, every teacher. And
no,
even,
but, like, I get it now.
I get it.
After reading it last night, I was like, oh.
There's something about him. But, like, it's just so weird that they were, like, take, like, a group of kids and, like, by the way.
I am like, 6 years old.
Like, this man shagged. And we were all like, okay. All
right. And what do you want me to do about that?
You can tell, though, like, in this poem that, like, he was.
He knew his way around many different forms.
So, basically, Tam O'Shanter is a narrative poem. I don't know if I went on BBC Bite Size last night.
This
was me literally doing homework. But they always call, like the narrator of the poem just the narrator, but like I always think that it's like it is like 100% it's Burns.
Yeah,
like that is it's him just like telling a story, and he's quite critical of Tam, like but at the same time he's at the same time that he's being like critical for him being like a drunk and like an idiot, at the same time he like refers to him as like a hero and stuff. Like
he's very boys will be boys.
Aye, but like but we're still like that now, like folk who are like kind of like pissed and stupid and stuff, like we like really.
And people say white people don't have culture. Have you been to Scotland? Drinking is a culture.
Aye, like we cheer for confidence and stuff like this. Basically, like I'll go through like a brief like synopsis of like what this poem is. So Tam is a drunk. He's spent like the entire week in the house and in the pub getting pissed basically, and then he like rides home like at the witching hour, encounters a group of witches, gets caught for being a perv, and then is chased by these witches, and he gets away, and Burns, like, really hails him for that. Burns starts off, he describes, like, all these people, like, leaving the pub as, like, the night draws on, and Tam's still there. It goes on to talk about his wife, Kate, I think her name is.
Yeah. I'd say yes.
Yes. Is gathering our brows like gathering a storm, nursing our wrath to keep it warm. Very, very, very iconic. And it sets up where we're going to be going to next, which is a storm, like a supernatural kind of storm is like starting to brew as it gets closer and closer to the witching hour. And then Tam decides to leave the pub. Also, like, this is the first time that I've read this in like a really long time. And Tam, like, is, like, maybe having an affair
with the innkeeper's wife.
Yeah, the, like, landlady. And either they're, like, they're flirting or whatever, but, like...
It sounded like there was...
But on Burns' terms, like, they were definitely, like, at it. Like, at it. Like, they weren't just flirting. Like, I think they might have been, like, between some hay bales or in a close or something. But, In the second stanza, then, like, he does this, like, really good alliteration about how disgusting, basically, Tam is for being, like, sat in the pub all day, and that he should have took his wife Kate's advice. She told thy well thou was a skellum, a blithering, blustering, drunken blellum. Like that, the B-B-B, like that really does like...
Big and you can, Birkin bag.
You can like hear the like spit in your mouth when you like... Or it.
Literally, Cardi B is on that wave.
The influence. But like it does sound like disgusting and it's like the disdain for like the fact that he's been in this state for so long. And it says that he's been drunk from November till October. And there was a day that he was never sober, basically. And then he then like goes on to like allude a bit, like to what's going to happen, like the darkness that Tam's about to like encounter when he starts to describe the storm, and that any child or anyone would be able to understand that the devil had business on his hand because of how scary like this storm is. And then Tam gets on his horse.
Yeah, he gets on his horse and like I'm gonna say it. Robert Burns is a witch. He's in the know. He's off the craft. Because he mentions like all of the elements. Like it says Tam scalp it on through Dubbin Mire, which is like the mire is like swampy, like marshland. So that's the earth. And then he says, despising wind, rain and fire. Like, first of all, why would there be like fire? Like, I get that it's like obviously just emphasizing the rage of the storm, but that's the other like three elements, and like the whole setting of this being witchcraft, and obviously Scotland being like a pagan nation at heart. Like, he's just in the know. He just like, he's a witch. He's a bisexual witch.
Well, this is the our better version of Lord Byron. But I did look it up to see, because obviously this is like the roots of this poem are in folklore. I'll get to that later, but I was looking up like how he would like ken all this stuff, and we'll go into like the other stuff that he like the I would say like all this like witchery and stuff and all these like old wives tales. But basically Burns's mum, and I think it's his auntie, I think it's his uncle's wife, who was a widow, they would sit around the fire and they would like tell all these fucking stories. and like Burns is like really wee, and he keeps asking them like, tell me more, like creepy stuff about all these like boogeymen and stuff like that and all these witch stories. And like he was like quite switched on because he's obviously like remembered all this stuff and like wrote it down. Or like I do ken, like when folk like tell like folk tales and stuff like that shit sticks. Like you didn't even need to be writing that down. Like if it's interesting enough and it creeps you enough, like you're gonna remember it.
Yeah.
So that is genuinely where like all this stuff comes from, is him sitting in the fire with two women and like again everything they say. So like if you want to say that Burns is a witch,
he had a coven from a young age.
He had a coven for a young age, exactly.
And like he like obviously there was like dispute as to whether this is like Robert Burns like recalling something that may have like he thought sort of experienced himself, so maybe the narration is him but also Tam is him. And then like because he describes something like so well, it's in the same like bit as the where he describes the elements, like you know when you have that feeling like someone's watching you, and he says, whiles glowering we prudent cares, so, like prudent being like good attention, like trying to predict what's going to happen to you. And then he's like kind of watching over his shoulder, and they're talking about like lest bogles catch him unawares. And bogles, like if you don't know, is like Scottish folk for like, even like still in Doric they still say like tatty bogle, which is like a scarecrow. So like a bogle is like a ghost. A bogle's a spirit or
well,
a ghost.
I was going to say like earlier before we started recording, Liam mentioned bogles, and I'm thinking, is that where boogeyman comes from?
It is. So like a lot of, so like you have the bog, which is English version of like bogle.
Mm-hmm.
And you even have like busiman or like busiman, which is like, which is like the Norwegian version of the same word. Like most Indo-European languages have the same like root for like ghost. And that's where boogeyman comes from. So like he's keeping an eye out for the Selena. He's trying to watch for the boogeyman.
I was like keeping that to myself earlier, and I knew that you would know that that is where the man came from. I was like, that sounds too familiar.
Come on, etymology. Come on, Susie Dent.
Susie Dent, queen. Tam gets onto his horse, Meg. Love that. Just a horse called Megan.
birth name Megan.
And then he starts his journey home. We did Google this, like the significance of like Meg being a grey mare.
Yeah, grey horses are supposedly like, because I knew something about grey horses. I love a bit of witchcraft. I do. It has to be said. And grey horses in old wives' tales are like a bad omen. Like horses with all white feet or grey horses are like unlucky. And like the fact that he's riding out on Meg at the start of this, I hate saying riding out on Meg. That sounds like
I think we all.
I think we all would like to ride out on Meg. No, but like, yeah. So the fact that he starts his journey on a grey mare, like unlucky, first of all. So then he encounters like, we'll get to it.
So basically, he gets on Meg and he begins his journey back to his house. And this is when he has to pass Alloway Kirk, which is where this story will centre. But on his way there, Burns starts to describe like all the creepy shit that's on the way. Past the Birks and Meeklestain were drunken Charlie Brackneck's bane, and through the weans and by the cairn where hunters found the murdered bairn, and near the Forn of Bane the Well where Mungo's mother hanged herself. That is my favourite bit, because I can remember, like, even now, or like when I was younger, like King Light Winfolk would be like, oh, didn't go down there, that's where like such and such, yeah, like that's where like whoever got like battered, or like that's where like Henny's dad like hung his cell. Like they kind of superstitions, like if something bad happens in an area, like they can, that kind of energy sticks. Like even if it's there or no, like you hear, like I remember when I was younger, there was like, yeah, aye, there was like a pond like near my house when I was younger, and like all this terrible shit like happened in this pond, like a couple of bairns like drowned when it was like frozen air, and like folk used to take like their unwanted animals and stuff, and they would drown them in this pond, and like we used to go down there to like, because you would have to go past it. You would have to go past it if you wanted to go sledging, basically, in the winter. But, like, to go past the energy on the way and past the pond, like, it was horrendous. And that bit of the poem, like, that really stands out to me, because, like, even though this was, like, what, like, 300 years ago, like, he's wrote this poem, like, that shit still stands. Like, even
Scottish people are superstitious.
Oh, aye. That bit really stood out to me, because I was like, that's really fucking relatable. And it's really dark as well.
Yeah, no, there's literally, like, there's a bit of Inverness where, like, multiple car crashes have happened. Like, multiple people have died on this one corner. And my granny's like, hold your breath as we go past. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what the holding your breath thing is, but apparently, like, if you go past cemeteries and stuff, you're supposed to hold.
Like, bracing yourself, maybe? Like,
kind of, but I think it's to not let the spirit get in you or whatever. But, like, you hold your breath while you go. She, like, I try not to go past it. Like, one time I walked. So back in the drunken days, I walked home alone from town, and my mum said, don't go past the islands. But I did. I went past the islands. And that's where the corner is, where a lot of people have, like, it's really bad. Like, they need to just try and figure out a way to, like, put traffic lights up or something, because it's just really bad for, like, people swinging around that corner really fast. But I walked home alone, and it was just, I've never had a worse walk home. Like, I was looking over my shoulder for the boogeyman. Like, I was like, bye.
And then after this part, Burns basically says that Tam is literally so drunk that he can hardly sense danger. And this is when he's like approaching the kirk, and he can see like a huge light. It probably is the light of the fire. But like when I was younger, I always pictured this as like a huge red light, like kind of like actual like warning signs, like kind of like Twin Peaks red.
Kill Bill sirens
are going off, and like Tam's like, fuck that, like, I can hear bagpipes. I'm going to go check this out. And Meg, at this point, like, this is literally in the poem, Meg is literally looking at Tam like, you're fucking joking, like, surely fucking no. And she's just really hesitant, does not want to follow Tam, but is loyal to him for some fucking reason and follows him. And Meg, like, picture, like, Meg and Tam, like, hands on walls, like hoofs on wall, like looting, peering, like, into this church.
Like Scooby-Doo, like where he's like on his tiptoes.
Like Meg is like that, like totally shitting bricks. And I'm not going to read this entire bit, because this is like a few stanzas long, like describing like the scenes inside the kirk. And obviously it is really important to the story, but I would suggest that yous do go back and like read this, because it, especially with like an adult's eye, this shit is really fucking interesting. It's one of the best poems that I've ever read. But basically, inside the church, and even at this point, the Alloway Kirk did not have a roof. It was like a ruin. I'm not sure if it was like a Catholic church and maybe it had been burned down in the glorious evolution, but we'll not get into that.
I hear tin whistles in your future.
And then basically Meg and Tam are like peering into this church, and the devil is like by the fire, and he's fucking love this, by the way. Like, this is the Mace Metal scene ever. The
devil, like, this would make a really good like Ryan Murphy, like, you know how he's in the American Horror Stories thing, like, it would make a really good like just a little one episode installment of a story. Like, the description here is so next level.
It sounds like a like Slayer or Iron Maiden song where the devil is literally like in front of the fire blasting bagpipes. Blasting his bagpipes, and all these witches and warlocks are like dancing around them. But I didn't ken this, and well, I had forgotten about it, or maybe when I was younger this like didn't make sense to me. But there's like coffins like strewn about everywhere, and there's dead people inside the coffins holding candles tight as fucking their like cold dead hands. And then unchristened babies, or bairns, like, but unchristened bairns are me, anyway. I don't know about you, but I was not christened, so I would have been there. and thieves and murderers are all dancing with them. So isn't it just witches and warlocks and stuff? Like, I don't know if I've interpreted that wrong, and maybe they were, like, among the dead, but, like, I think it might be, like, the living dead.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that I got, which is, like, very fucking scary. So, like, I don't know if I've, like, and cool, obviously, but, like, I don't know if I've just, like, glanced there that, or maybe no understood why unchristened children at this, especially when this poem was written, would be there. Like, that just didn't comprehend with me until I went and read this last night. So, anyway, Tam's taking in the sight, and, like, he is, like, kind of shitting himself, but, like, he can't draw his eyes away. Mainly because the witches are hot.
Literally, but he kind of describes them as butterfaces, though, like, most of them. Like some of them are, like, have the warts and not nonsense, but there's the one. There's her. There's she. Ladies and gentlemen, her.
She doesn't have a name. And it's the, like, this grand witch, are we calling her?
You may take off your beaks.
She's in the middle of this dance as well, and she's wearing a short skirt, and Tam, who
come on Taylor Swift,
who's like,
she wears short skirts.
So Tam's so drunk, and I to be honest, I think that like an idiot like Tam would probably do this if they were sober as well.
Very much Argyle Street antics at present.
Like catcalls, essentially catcalls this fucking witch. What is it he says? It's a bit of a short skirt.
He says, "Weel done, cutty sark." So, like, a cutty sark is like a short. So, a sark is a nightdress, and then cutty means short, like
cut short. That's basically what it means.
Basically, like, it's conjunction.
You can, I think it's like kind of like when you read like these old Scots poems or books. It's kind of like when you read Shakespeare if you read it for like.
Yeah.
You can kind of like.
Well, like, have you ever seen the Dracula movie where she's like, you see her and she comes out and she's like all glowing and she's wearing this short skirt, like after she's turned into the vampire, just in the like white short nightdress. Yeah. I imagine that.
Like, but even like just for like the C and the S, like you can like take that in your brain and just be like, oh, that means cut short,
yeah,
or short skirt.
Oh,
like that's how I started, because obviously like I speak like some kind of bastardized Scots now, but. I kind of like well enough to like be like translating every single thing. So like, I don't know, you like see things that you recognize, like it's like kind of like when you're like reading Shakespeare and stuff, and then you're like managed to like make out what it actually means in your head. But obviously, Scots is a lot more familiar to us. So anyway, Tam like sees all these witches, catcalls them. And basically, I'm thinking they all, like, flip round, like, and take him in, and then it's,
very much record scratch.
And then, like, it's teeth out, like, the chase is on. Tam, like, hops onto Meg, like, holding his wee bonnet down, and, like, fucking beelines it out of there. There's a really good, like, that's like basically like describing how Meg is like running for her life. Like, couldn't be gone any faster.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down, but.
Oh, I had it, but I couldn't. Damn it. Yeah, I know what you mean, though. I know the bit. The bit, you know the bit, everyone. You know the bit.
I think there's alliteration in this point as well. Like, the even the way that the poem's written, because it's the pentameter that it's in, like, it's like the galloping of feet.
Yeah.
It's like durum, durum, aye. Like, the whole pace of the poem's pretty fast. Like, when you do read it, like, it's not like, it's like the way that it's written is, like, meant to, like, be tense, and it really does succeed in that.
I find the quote, "Now do thy speedy utmost, Meg." So, like, it's so good. It's so good. The command this man had over language, unparalleled.
It's hot.
Like, Shakespeare gets a lot of, like, smoke. And I'm not saying it's just because he's English, but also, like, Robert Burns, unparalleled. Carol Ann Duffy could never. She could never.
Her and her onion.
We have to talk about that at some point, because I have a lot to say on that onion.
I've got a lot to say about Carol Ann Duffy's still alive, right?
I think so.
I'm actually not going to bother saying what I was just going to say. I feel like it was going to be about Sylvia Plath.
24/7. Oh.
Carol Ann Duffy has a poem that just rips off.
Plagiarism.
I think it's Lady Lazarus that it rips off. It's called Shooting Stars. Go and read it, and then read Lady Lazarus by Sylvia Plath. And get back to us on that. But nobody send this to Carol Ann Duffy. I really do like her. She has some good poems, but...
Remember the bite-sized moment? Carol Ann Duffy is a fat fucking...
Anyways. So, sorry about that digression. Tam flies onto Meg. They're running like hell. And then he's basically he's running towards a bridge. I don't know if he needs to take this way him, or subconsciously Tam kens that he's got to cross running water.
In the narration, Robert Burns says that he needs to pass the keystone of the bridge.
Oh, does he? So he was going that way anyway.
Yeah, well, no, he says he needs to pass it because, like,
he needs to get
over the running water.
So if he's done a ken, there is a superstition that... this is in Lord of the Rings as well. So.
It's like so undefined as to what thing can't get over running water.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
in Lord of the Rings, it's like the ring wraiths are like chasing like the Fellowship of the Ring, and then you have seen Lord of the Rings.
Well,
in
Scooby Doo Legend of the Vampire, the vampires can't get over the bridge at Vampire Rock. We find out later on that it's a series of pulleys and strings don't actually extend far enough to get over the bridge when they're flying.
That's still a cool, like, reference to, like, that, like, vampires or ghosts or witches and, I guess, werewolves.
Goblins,
and, like...
ghouls and no good bloodsucker.
Like, kind of get air running water for some reason, or the ring wraiths in Lord of the Rings. But he's, like, running and running and running to get to this bridge, and basically he gets there in the nick of time, and that's when the famous scene where this witch... she's, like, on the banks of the river or the burn or whatever, and reaches and grabs Meg's tail, and she... There's a reference to that there's, like, I don't know if this is just, like, in letters that Burns had wrote to his pals, that, like, the thing that made the witch actually snatch her hand away wasn't the fact that she was there at the burn. It was, like, lightning struck her.
Ooh.
That, I don't know. I read that online last night. Don't know how true that is.
Well, also, horse tails in superstition... they're lucky. They're a lucky thing.
Oh, so she's...
they're used in witchcraft a lot, but, like, see when you pull on a horse's tail, like, especially, like, a braided mare's tail, it's, like, bad luck to pull it, but, like, the thing is good luck, and it wards away from witches and evil. Like, that's...
so she's, like, so desperate to catch him that she does not give a shit.
Yeah, she grabs the tail, but then lightning strikes because, like, I don't know, God? Yeah, Jesus?
And then she snatches her hand away. And it rips Meg's tail, like, straight for the hinge, basically.
Yeah.
And then she's left, she like, a lump. Like, a wee stump. And then, in his final words, basically, Burns says that, just remember when you're pissed as fuck and, like, you're making your way home, didn't forget about, like, Tam O'Shanter and his horse. Whene'er to drink you're inclined, or cutty sarts are in your mind, think you may buy the joys o'er dear, remember Tam O'Shanter's mare. So basically he's saying, like, when you're out and about and you're doing naughty shit, just remember that, like, God will strike you down for that.
Go home before you black out.
Aye, go home before you black out, basically. Like, the whole poem, like, in its bare bones, like, it's basically...
it's cautionary.
Yeah, like, Tam's been at, like, the pub all week and he's, I don't know, been having fun with the landlady and whatever, but it all comes to a very, very quick end. So... And even the celebration that, like, the witches and the devil and stuff are having, like, it's fleeting. Like, the whole poem, and it's bare bones, is basically trying to say that human happiness is fleeting. So, like, take it while you can. Anything bad can happen to you at any moment. Or anybody can, like, come and catcall you and you ruin your day.
It's a girl boss gatekeep sort of tale, isn't it? It's like, you need to, like, take life by the... It's live, laugh, love. At its essence, it's live, laugh, love.
So, that is the rundown of the poem. Oh my God, we've been talking for half an hour about this.
And I could go more.
I could go more, we will go more.
As I will.
You were saying earlier, like, this might be Burns that's, like, it's been, yeah. Like, for his own past experience. Actually, no. Okay. That's not the truth.
That is not correct.
Basically, it's about... This is based on an actual person called Douglas Graham, a Shanter farm in Carrick.
Shanter? Yeah. I hardly know her.
He's been waiting for that. Like, literally stole my joke. So, basically, he's this guy, Douglas Graham's been at a pub, like, basically all week. It's his cousin's inn, so he's been, like, basically supplied with, like, drink for free. So, like, why would you leave? Along with his pal John Davidson, and there is, like, a suitor John or something. I was gonna say hardly know her. Douglas Graham lost his bonnet one night, and the line in he had all his, like, money for the market days, and he obviously gets home, and his wife is absolutely raging. He's like, "Where's the fucking money?" And then he makes up this thing that he got chased home by witches. And everybody was like, bullshit. But, like, it became a folktale. And that's obviously how Burns has got into this. Because, like, even, like, Auld Lang Syne and stuff, like, Burns, like, went travelling around Scotland, heard everybody's folktales and folk songs and went, I'm taking notes. Because not a lot of folk could read and not a lot of folk could write. So, like, he really did... He girl-bossed it.
OG, like, podcast. Like, what we're doing now is what he did. It's kind of poetic in its way. Like, we're taking his folktale and we're putting it to people who can't read and write as well.
So, basically, that is where it comes to. It is a folktale. And then Burns has obviously just took it and spun it and made it 100 times better. And then we've got the modern implications of what this poem means. Obviously, it means a lot to people in Scotland and, like, this is by and large my favourite poem.
Oh, yeah.
I hear a couple of, like, other poems that I like that are Scots ones. Like, the Norland Wind's a really good one. I can't even for the life of me remember who wrote it. It's a woman from Aberdeen. It's either called the... Aye, it's called The Norland Wind or The Flying Geese. Definitely read that. But
we'll put a link to it on our Patreon.
Like, a few folk have done a good cover of that, like, in song. But this is, by and large, like, it's Scotland's best poem, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And then, obviously, the bonnet that Tam wears, it's his wee blue bonnet, and obviously it's not called the Tam O'Shanter at that point because...
Just a bonnet.
Yeah. And then they obviously got the name... Tam O'Shanter, and they wear them in the military. Like,
yeah,
they wear these in the military. They wear them. Folks still wear them here. There's been, like, there's a French company as well that makes Tam O'Shanters.
There was that guy that was really annoying on TikTok, and he used to put on the Tam O'Shanter with a little bit of ginger hair sticking out of it.
For fuck's sake!
That was the worst. If you're listening, which you won't be, because you clearly have no understanding of Scottish culture
and have no taste.
Catch me outside. How about that? You know.
That's. They sell them in Edinburgh. I don't know if they wouldn't sell them in Glasgow, fuck that, but...
They sell them in Inverness. Loch Ness, best expert.
Oh my God, that, like, the t-shirt that they sell where it's the Jurassic Park logo, but it's got Nessie on it. That's a serve. It is a serve.
Hang on, hold on. In a future episode, we will be talking about Nessie. Oh, we will be talking about Nessie.
We will. It'll be a deep dive.
That'll be it. That was good. Did you mean to do that?
Yeah, I meant that.
That was hot.
So, any other... there is a boat called the Cutty Sark, which is named after, like, the Cutty Sark that's, like, in this poem. And the masthead that is on the boat is a woman... It's a witch, and she's holding in her hand, it's a real horse's tail that's on the front of this boat. I'm pretty sure the boat was the one that's in the Boston Tea Party. Don't know how many boats were there for that, but it is one of the boats. It's still docked in America somewhere. But that, I was like listening to another podcast, Spirits, and they were going through sailor superstitions, and the mastheads on boats, they were decorated in ways that would like ward off like evil spirits in the ocean, and like bad luck for the boat as well. And if it's a horse's tail, it was good luck, like you're saying. It's,
But does he not talk about like witches being like steering sailors off in this poem as well at some point? Like there's a bit in this where he talks about how they make ships crash. So it's kind of a full circle moment for him. With
that. It is. What the fuck? But aye, that's the ward off like kind of like sirens, Davy Jones, that kind of thing. That is what that masthead's for. But that is it. I can't think of any more modern implications. There probably is hundreds. I mean, this kind of like goes for like the mean girls trope to like that. These witches are definitely in the
literally.
Like, this came after Macbeth, but she
so
said it.
The way Regina George got hit by a bus, which is kind of like a modern horse, so like
it goes all the way to the top.
Okay, so that was fun, hard to listen to. We were so young, we were so naive. But you know what? That was the first brick thrown, and the rest was history.
The rest was her story.
Her story! Good for her.
If you've made it this far, thanks so much. I don't know if there's like anything else to say apart from the next episode that we're going to be doing is going to be the usual for the usual. And we're going to be doing some Scottish folklore stories. So I'm going to tell Liam a fairy tale, and then the next episode after that, he's going to tell me a nice little fairy tale, and we'll be back on our folklore ooky spooky shit. That is hot for us.
We did it.
Good for us.
We did it, Joel.
This episode's a mess.
No, literally, I'm like thinking about you editing this. I'm like, how much is gonna need to be cut from what we like? It's just insane.
We've done like 20 minutes worth of the intro and outro. The actual Tam O'Shanter episode's like 35 minutes long.
Yeah, I feel
and
like we could
be like excited to click on an episode that's like an hour long and then just be like, oh. I suppose I just need to ask people to, I don't even want to rate and review.
Rate and review, but think about like episodes 2 through 10 and maybe not this one and the first one.
Maybe I should like put the title like relaxed fit, like bonus episode.
Tam O'Shanter creepy wee version or something. 10-minute version.
So I follow us on Instagram at The Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter at The Creepy Wee Pod, visit us at thecreepyweepodcast.co.uk and leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or iTunes. Thanks.
Thank you. What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? What are you... Okay, bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.